Well, welcome to this new episode of Carolyn Talks. This is the podcast slash YouTube channel where I, your host, Carolyn Hines, film critic and journalist, speak to film creatives around the world about their work, the industry, and what inspires them. And today I am joined by filmmaker Laurie Thompson to talk about her documentary, A Mother Apart, about the, I think you can call it, expansive emotional exploration of poet and activist of Stacey Ann Chin, as she goes on, I think, a journey of self-discovery to track down her mother, Hazel, who has been absent for most of Stacey Ann's life. Laurie, first of all, thank you for joining me for today to talk about the film.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Carolyn.
Yes. And so the film is showing at the Hot Docs Film Festival here in Toronto later on this month, April. And the reason I'm starting there is because I always think it's so interesting. The thing with documentaries is how you can have films like this with me with such personal and intimate topics, and you're showing it at an international film festival where people all around the world is going to get an inside look into the lives of the subjects of these films. And in this one in particular, it's about the trauma that Stacey Ann and then eventually her sister Lara suffers from their mom being absent and for much of their lives. And even when she's present, she's still emotionally distant. So talk to me about, first of all, taking a film like this to a film festival.
Well, yeah, you're right. It is a very personal story. And you know, what I've always learned and understood about filmmaking and storytelling is that the more personal, the more specific, the more universal it ends up being. And I do believe there's some sort of like alchemy, there's some sort of magic in storytelling that makes that true. And so, you know, Stacey Ann is someone who's spent her whole life sort of unpacking her story in a public way. She's a public figure, she's a poet, she's found this public voice, and it's resonated with people for many, many years, way before I came along. In fact, I knew of her because of her memoir, The Other Side of Paradise, that she wrote in the era, somewhere around 2007, 2008. And so, yeah, this was, you know, it required a lot of trust on her part, because the personal, you know, journey is, I mean, it is just so intimate and there are so many painful parts of it. But the taking it to a wide stream or a mainstream audience, I don't want to say, but that's the easy part, but that's the part that, you know, we're enjoying or we're about to enjoy, because we know that it's going to resonate with so many people. And for the people who've already seen it, audiences who've already seen it, you know, in my sort of inner circle, have already talked to me about how much of Stacey Ann's story resonates with them. So yeah, we're just going to get to do that on a bigger scale now that it's having its world premiere at Hot Docs in exactly a week from today, April 26th.
Yeah, and I related a lot to it too. I've been having my own, I sound repetitive as I'm saying this. Anyone who's seen my other interviews from this week will wonder, like, can we repeat this? But for the last, I think, the last month, I've been watching so many films, and this is very unintentionally, about relationships between mothers and daughters,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when I started this film, I was like, wait, I wasn't expecting it to get as heavy into the emotions that that Stacey Ann gets into. And they also having like similar backgrounds, because she's from the Caribbean as well. She's from Jamaica. And she mentions things in that were very common, I think are still very common in the Caribbean. Like, for instance, when one parent leaves, like, they usually send back what we would, like, these giant barrels filled with stuff. And, like, I grew up with my mom. And I grew up with my mom, my twin sister, and our older brother. But my sister and I, we didn't meet our dad until we were, like, 8 or 9. And then once we got to know him, like, he lived overseas at the time. He lived in Canada here. And he would send barrels, right? And I remember, and when she started talking about that, it brought to mind those same things, receiving the barrels from my dad, but also other friends of mine who during primary school and secondary school, who also got barrels from their family members, you know? And sometimes it wasn't only just a parent, you get it from like an aunt and uncle who lived in either the States or in England. And it was such a big event. And it kind of like really spoke to how much children value receiving things. And it's not necessarily that the things hold more value than the person itself, but because you, this is all you get, this is this the tangible thing, you value it so much, and you kind of validate yourself in receiving these items. I remember I have this very, very distinct memory, and it's been stuck in my head since I watched the film. My dad's standing on a barrel, and this barrel had a bucket of gums, like gumballs, right? And they were individually wrapped. And I distinctly remember my sister and I going to school and selling these things, selling
Selling them.
each gumball for like 25 cents.
Little entrepreneurs.
Right, but I just like the film made me think about that, and it's been stuck in my head. Like, yeah, the barrel children. I don't think in Barbados we had a specific term for it, but it was a very common thing. But then it kind of made me think again, like how much of what she was speaking about is such a commonplace occurrence in the Caribbean. You know, for so many children, where a parent, an uncle, an aunt, someone that raises you and that you draw so you're so intimately connected with leaves. And they say they're leaving for a better life, and you're like, but can't I be a part of that better life? You know, and like the film really touches on that, and the film really touches, I think, on Stacey as her struggle even as an adult. Like, I'm 40 years old. I think she's only a couple years older than me. Even up until this age, you're still struggling with like, who am I as a child? Who am I as a daughter? You know, and like how that kind of creates a very a significant instability in your life. And the film starts there. The film starts with Stacey Ann going to Montreal, you know, because that's where her mom lived. And she's like, I was afraid to go to Montreal because I didn't want to confront that my mom could have definitely really truly had a better life for me, apart from me there. So talk to me about starting the film, and I think, and just getting involved with Stacey and doing this, and then starting in Montreal, because I thought Montreal is a very interesting place to start her journey, because she travels to different countries. She goes to Germany and Jamaica, but she starts in Montreal.
Yeah, so what's the question? You want me to talk
Talk to me
about
about
why we
getting in
started?
touch with Stacey Ann, and then like deciding her first step into this journey is going to Montreal specifically.
Well, getting in touch with her and stemmed from my knowledge of her writing life, and I was in attendance during a reading of her memoir in 2008 here in Toronto, where I'm based. She has a lot of extended chosen family here, and there are a lot of Jamaicans, Caribbean people in general here in Toronto. So there was a big draw. I remember sitting in a park listening to her read from her memoir. Got a copy of her memoir, and when I was interested in 2016 around this idea of doing a documentary on women, Black women activists, and what it is to raise children in these particular times, she was the first person I thought of. So I got in touch with her through a mutual friend, and went and visited her in Zuri in New York. And the rest is kind of history. She agreed to be part of this film that was an exploration of motherhood, and over time, getting to know her. And this is what happens in development of a documentary. You spend time, you understand, you're still trying to find the story, right? And during that period of getting to know Stacey Ann and Zuri, it was clear that this sort of one-sided attempt to get close to her mother wasn't over, that it was something that persisted well into her. She's actually 51, so she's a good decade older than you, but she's been involved and very much engaged in this relationship that started when she found her mom for the first time in Germany when she was 25. So the reason we started in Montreal was because that was, from a little girl's point of view, I mean, that's where she knew her mother to be. That's where her mother lived for many years when she first left Jamaica. She left before Stacey Ann was 3 months. So she grew up from 3 months till not to 9 years old, just hearing about this faraway place called Montreal. And that's where her mom was. And her mom came back to Jamaica at age 9 when Stacey Ann was 9. Stacey Ann thought it was to come and get her and her brother, but that wasn't the case. Still a little bit of a mystery as to why she came back exactly. It was probably for her, some of her papers, to get married to her husband in Montreal. And so, yeah, she left, and it was sort of the second abandonment. And then, like I said, Stacey Ann found her when she was 25 through a series of events, located her in Germany, and went and visited her and saw her for the first time as an adult. So Montreal was this place that really symbolized that childhood imagination, and it's part of the reason why we use animation in the film at this point of the film, because we do have real footage and actual footage of the house in Montreal. And she canvasses the neighborhood. I don't want to give everything away. I want folks to actually obviously see the film and experience it. But Montreal is a significant place because it was this place that Stacey Ann always thought she was going to live. She thought she was going to be a Canadian. She was taking French lessons because she thought she would, be reunited with her mother there, as many Barrel children do. And in your case, you talked about Barrel children and the phenomenon. I was actually looking up, trying to remember the scholar who coined the term, a Jamaican scholar. Maybe you can put it in the show notes. But yeah, it's a term that I didn't come up with, that really does, describe so many children whose parents have had to leave to seek a better life, economic upward mobility for their families, and based on immigration rules and immigration schemes like we had here in Toronto in the 70s. A lot of these mothers and fathers were not allowed to bring their children. It was actually part of the policy. So Stacey Ann thought for a long time that she was a Barrel child, but her mom didn't leave under those conditions, and she didn't have an intention, or if she did have intentions of reuniting, those were at some point dropped, and her mom never did come back for her, and she never did receive a Barrel either.
And you mentioned the time 2016, 2017, and like coming together with Stacey. And for you personally, as a filmmaker, and then also just as a woman, and also having like a similar background, like being Jamaican as well, how do you mentally prepare yourself to undertake the task of making a film like this? Because, for instance, you're not making a film about, say for instance, like conservation. You know, you're making a film about a woman and really being very open and personal with you. And like in some essence, as a filmmaker, I imagine you have to almost be a sounding board for her, because you and perhaps like your camera person are the only people present when like she's having like these mental struggles, where there's moments where she's like struggling with her emotions and she has nowhere to put them. And you know, there's like the confusion and the angst and the anger and frustration and all of these things. But how do you prepare yourself, and I think also protect yourself mentally and emotionally for undertaking a film like this, especially when you know it's going to span years?
Well, I don't know if this was my first feature length doc, and I don't know that I went into it. I mean, a little naivete, it takes you a long way. I don't know that I knew it was going to take 6.5 years. None of us could have anticipated COVID, that, prolonged things a little bit. But I really just it was it started with conversation, with dialogue, and with understanding that we had a lot of great conversations before we even knew what the story was going to be, just about motherhood, about being daughters of Jamaican women, who've had to immigrate, and for different reasons. My mom came to Toronto in the 60s, late 60s, with my two brothers. I was born here. And she had a lot of, I'm sure, similar pressures and experiences as Stacey Ann's mom did, being in Canada. But she didn't have the dynamic of having kids left in Jamaica. My mom had her two boys with her, and then I came along. And so there were a lot of differences between my story and Stacey Ann's, but then there were a lot of similarities. We're both queer, or identify as lesbians, and that's something else that has really shaped Stacey Ann's activism and her voice. And we all know that, and in a lot of Caribbean communities, homosexuality, queerness is something that we're still struggling with, I think, as a community. And so we had a lot of conversations about that. So in some cases, you know, it was like therapy for both of us, and the building of a friendship that eventually translated into the trust that is so necessary to tell a story like this.
And I think, and it comes through in the film because you can tell that Stacey Ann is comfortable with you. And then that also translates into Lara when she's introduced into the film being comfortable with you. Because Stacey Ann and Lara do talk about things that Lara experienced living with their mother that Stacey Ann didn't, you know, and like she, like there's like for instance, she mentioned like the verbal, I guess you would call it verbal abuse and the dismissiveness and their scenes with Hazel with the way she speaks to Lara and like Lara has to be comfortable with you showing like putting this into the film. So talk to me about like being like your time with Lara because she was also a surprise for me. I wasn't expecting her to be featured in the film, but when she was featured in the film, like she I think offers up a different dynamic to the film and offers a different perspective because Stacey Ann has a very I think she has this very particular way of looking at her relationship to the woman. And coming from me as an outsider, and I guess also influenced by my own relationship with my mom, which can be like have like some tension as well, where I kind of saw where Lara was just like I got the sense sometimes that Lara is staying in contact with her mom for Stacey Ann, for the sake of Stacey Ann. And she like because she became emancipated as a minor, but also I and this is not me judging Stacey Ann, but I got the sense that Stace, I wanted to tell Stacey Ann, can you just look at Lara's face? Like there's moments where Lara is very upset, but Stacey Ann is just talking about their mom. And there are moments I want to be like, stop talking about your mom. Talk to Lara. Like be a, like listen to Lara, read Lara. And so talk to me about get like being introduced to Lara and getting her into the film because I really got the sense where I'm like, I just wanted to give her like a really big hug because I got the sense that she wanted distance, but she's not really being able to get it because Stacey Ann is still trying so hard. She uses the word grace a lot, like extolling grace to her mom. I'm like, you also need to extol some grace to Lara and allow Lara to get some distance.
I their relationship is, I mean, there's, so you've mentioned a lot that I think for folks who haven't seen the film, it would be very confusing. We have a lot of archival footage. And that's what Carolyn's re referring to. That's what you were referring to when you were talking about the harsh treatment of Lara. Stacey Ann found her mom in Germany and, you know, learned at that moment that she had a younger sister, 16 years her junior. And that was the beginning of a really beautiful friendship. They, a beautiful relationship. I would even go as far as to say that, you know, Lara was sort of Stacey Ann's first act of mothering, before she had, well, before she had Zuri. And she only returned to Germany over and over again, mostly for Lara. So there's a lot of trust there. There's a lot of, there is a lot of grace, in fact, between them. And Lara's a grown, she's an adult, and she's made, she made her decision to be involved in the film. But you're very astute in picking up the fact that she trusts, there's a lot of trust there. And I'm sure, without Stacey Ann trusting me, obviously Lara wouldn't trust me. She just met me on that trip we made to Germany, and was so generous and so trusting. But I, you know, I'm not taking any credit for that. It's all because Stacey Ann trusts me. And at the end of the day, it's not Lara's story. There's so much more of Lara's experience that if and when she was ever able and or sorry, willing to tell would be a completely different film. But we had to find that balance because to leave her out of the story would have been to ignore a really important person in Stacey Ann's life. You know, there's a lot to Lara. She grew up with Hazel, with their mom. Stacey Ann did not. So it's an also an interesting character study, if you will, to sort of see the impact and the effect that having Hazel as a mother has had on these two individuals who come together in, yeah, just it is just so interesting. And I, you know, I just have a lot of respect and love for Lara. I do feel a lot of compassion for her because you can see she's still hurting And perhaps, she's 16 years younger than Stacey Ann. She's still on her journey to getting to a place. Excuse me. She's still on her journey of getting to a place of grace or, healing. And it's an ongoing process, even for Stacey Ann. But, I think Laura's just that much further behind, and because of the fact that she was raised by Hazel and went through these really, really difficult times as a teenager.
I think the inclusion of her is important. Like you mentioned it briefly because it gives us the audience, and I guess in a sense, Stacey Ann, in looking back at the film in hindsight, and just in general in their lives, a look at the kind of parent Hazel could have been, I probably would have been to Stacey Ann, you know, because she's like, there's a word that Stacey Ann uses, affable. I don't think the word that came to my mind instead was charismatic. She's very charismatic and charming because there's a sequence where she's talking to you, because Stacey Ann, she goes off to like get coffee or something, and she's talking to you, and you asked her this very particular question, and she says, "Oh, I'm sure Stacey Ann knows why I left." And I'm like, "Does she?" Because like one of the main reasons for making this film, and like for Stacey Ann's struggle for most of her life with regards to her relationship to her mother and her mother's absenteeism, is that she doesn't really know why her mom left. You know, she doesn't understand, but Hazel is saying that she does. You know, but it's giving an insight into Hazel's mentality where she makes excuses for herself and lays, not the blame necessarily, but she lays things at other people's feet, you know, so she doesn't really have to explain her actions. She doesn't have to explain not only why she left Jamaica twice, but why she left Montreal without telling, Stacey Ann, you know, why she moved to Germany. And then there's like the talk, there's one point where Stacey Ann talks about her mom. She would, after she had been in contact for a while, just disappearing off with like completely ending all contact for like 3 years, you know, and like she doesn't give explanations for that, but she's saying, oh no, she understands. And but it, you get in having that chance and have Hazel talk to you, and then in essence talking to us, the audience, I had the thought to me, I'm just like, she's so charismatic, she's very convincing, she knows exactly what to say to people, you know. You can see why she was so friendly with the neighbors in Montreal, why she got people to help her in Germany over and over again, you know, and why Stacey Ann in particular keeps coming back. Because Stacey Ann, like the film is talking about a mother who disappears, but I think that the film is also talking about a daughter who keeps searching. You know, she keeps searching for Hazel over and over and over and over again. Hazel doesn't come to her, she goes to Hazel over. And I thought it was an interesting juxtaposition to the video that Hazel and that Stacey Ann asked Zuri to make to Hazel when she goes to Germany. She said, "Say something to your grandmother." And Zuri, like, she's such an intelligent little girl, she's so insightful, where she says, "You're worried that family leaves, but it's okay because family always comes back." But then again, I had in my thought, but family doesn't always come back because Hazel is not the one that keeps coming back, it's Stacey Ann. So talk to me about that, having that moment with Hazel, because I think it's so insightful, but I also got the sense, like Stacey, I mentioned that she's like, oh, she sucked you in. Like she got you. So talk to me about that.
When I first started interviewing Stacey Ann, well, before we shot anything, she described her mom as a cross between the character from Catch Me If You Can and the character from A Beautiful Mind. And she has often used, terms like sorcery and alchemy and magic. And I mean, Hazel has managed to travel, around the world without a passport. She has, all types of she has ways. And I the ingenuity and the resourcefulness, I think that's something we all as like daughters and children of immigrants understand. There's something about surviving and making a way when
But
there
in a
often
way.
is no way. So I definitely believe that that's something, and the irony is that Stacey Ann has a lot of that too. She's very much Hazel in that respect. And so that was always something that I recognized. And Stacey Ann's very self-aware and recognizes that as well. So when she says, when she confronts me and says to me, that I was lured in or seduced by her mom, that I was sort of like had. I mean, like it was a moment, and we included it in the film because it really did. Well, it was a real moment. It was a real moment after our interview where I definitely was emotional hearing the story and he hearing Hazel's story, and Stacey Ann kind of read that as me being, duped or seduced by her mom. But at the same time, I do believe that like the empathy that Stacey Ann has, it shows you how complex and nuanced a relationship can be as a daughter, right? Like how in one breath you can know, or in one way you can know that there's some trauma there. And that her mom, she knows that her mom is struggling, and that the storytelling and the lying even, is part of her mom's survival. She has to have, she says this all the time. As a feminist, she has to make space for that, for her mom to have that experience and that be her reality. What kind of feminist would she be to begrudge that? The only problem is that when she puts on her feminist hat, she almost has to put her daughter hat aside to because the daughter is too hurt and the daughter is still reeling from the abandonment. So it's a really complicated relationship. And I think on some level, all our relationships with our parents can be complicated, but there is something very unique about, a daughter and a mother. Yeah, I'm not so sure I answered the question, but I do. Yeah, you picked up on that. What all off might actually seem like a conflict or a contradiction, in Stacey Ann, and I think that's okay. Like there's room, and that's why I love that we've been able to tell this story to show a Black woman in particular that we are complex, nuanced, often contradictory, but always seeking. Beings, who are on the same journey of self-discovery and self-actualization as everybody else.
No, I agree completely because I had the same thoughts watching the film and just like in general, like as I mentioned, I've been watching a lot of films, very unintentionally. They just all happen to be about mothers and our relationship, and it's all the same. Like the daughters, me as a daughter, and me being a woman and a feminist, understanding the complexities of our mothers. You know, understanding our mothers have their own struggles, our mothers have their own trauma, our mothers have their own complexities to deal with. And giving them the grace and understanding for that. But then we also struggle with setting boundaries for ourselves, you know, protecting ourselves. Like, how do we protect ourselves without hurting them? Though my in a sense, like creating boundaries in a sense does hurt them because our parents, our mothers, especially West Indian, Caribbean mothers and parents, they even no matter how old we get, they still see us as their children, but also they still see us as in order to respect them, we must listen to them. And listening doesn't only mean listening. Listening means doing what they say. You know, like they don't really separate being listening and doing, you know. They were like, I want you to listen to me. But instead, they would say, just do everything that I say, you know. You know, but like, you know, the saying, like, do as I say and not as I do. When in essence, they're really like, just do as I do too, because I'm always right. And but like in Stacey, and she's very, and like I love again that you made the film because me, as I said, being Black and Caribbean, the thing that I relate to so much of what she's saying, and like she's giving that Western perspective because we are raised in very specific ways. Because even though her mother didn't raise her, her grandmother did, you know. And
Yeah,
again,
to a
so many
point.
West Indian and Caribbean children are raised by their grandmothers, which means that they're raised with an older sense of the world, you know. And like Stacey Ann has that, and but the film is also, not talking about Zuri, it's about her trying to change the things that were done wrong with upbringing her and making sure she doesn't make those same mistakes with Zuri. You know, she's very present with Zuri, and She's very intentional in giving Zuri her own space and letting her speak for herself and having her own identity as a person. And I think also forming her own idea of feminism as well. So talk to me about Zuri and working and having Zuri in the film and like featuring her, because you mentioned art and like having the animated part of the film. And when I saw there's a little sketch that Zuri does, it's not really featured, but it's like a little glimpse. And I got the sense that she's so artistic. And again, that's something she got from her mom. But I kind of saw it. I don't know if maybe that was intentional. I kind of saw like the fact that she's an artist herself, tying into how you showed aspects of Stacey Ann's background through art, through animation as well.
There was a time when we actually toyed with the idea of having Zuri illustrate some of those moments. It would have required a lot more, many more, more resources and time than we had. And ultimately, like Zuri is a multi, she's an eclectic artist. She sings. We have an aspect of her si songwriting in the film. She does sketch very well. She's, she's just a really special child. She's an intellectual. She does photography. So yeah, she's very much, you see the effects of present parenting. You see the effects of what it is when you give a child space to be who they are. When you listen to them, they already had their thing going, right? Their living room protest series. There was something like 50 or 60 of those when we first started making the film, all on YouTube, and that's how a lot of people are introduced to Stacey Ann, through those living room protests that she started with Zuri when Zuri was barely 3 years old. So we implement those, we use those in the film as sort of little interstitial moments that help illustrate the kind of mom Stacey Ann is, despite the fact that she didn't have that upbringing. And it is something really special that we have. It's another form of archive. This film relies on Stacey Ann's own home videos and archive that she started when she found her mom in Germany when she was 25. She bought herself a camera and started recording all the trips she made. And so we have a lot of footage there. And then, of course, this beautiful YouTube archive, something that we dipped into. Again, yeah, just to illustrate that special relationship. And so yeah, Zuri is the she is an artist, and she's finding her voice, the way Stacey Ann found her voice.
She's finding, and I think even for very younger, she's certainly probably more self-aware than I was at that age. But in talking about the archival footage and how Stacey Ann is using media to not only record her time with Zuri, but also using it as a method of advocating with her and for her. Something you said there just made me think of how I wish one of the things that I miss, that I wish we had when we were growing up in the Caribbean, was access to cameras and like just being able to record our lives, and being able to record like just doing the mundane things, but even the bigger moments, because it makes me think of how like so much of our past, and not only our past, but our culture and our history and our upbringing and the way our parents were brought up is lost because having access to camcorders, like the handheld camcorders in the 80s and 90s, those things were very cost prohibitive. They were super
Hey,
expensive.
really
So
expensive, yeah.
like everyone didn't have them, and we weren't able to have those moments of the in a way to have reflection on us as adults. And I think the film does highlight how being able to record our lives in certain aspects is so vital to understanding who we are as people presently. Because Stacey Ann has the footage. When she was in Germany, she began recording her mom and Laura when she was in Germany when she first went there. She's able to look back and see what not only what Laura experienced in the moment, but what she herself experienced in the moment. Because while we're in it, we don't really get to a full sense of it until we're able to look back in hindsight. And that gives us a better opportunity and a better chance to really self-reflect and understand people around us and the world we were in. And I think for Zuri, she's getting that opportunity now, because her mom is taking the time to make sure she records it. And she has this film too to kind of give like a almost like a summary almost like of everything, but The film really made me think of wish like that. I really wish I had cameras access to like actual camcorders. My aunt used to take like a lot of pictures and stuff, but like not actual camcorders to record the moments. And the film really made me wish that. So like I wanted to ask you with regards to that. Like, is that one of the reasons you became a filmmaker where you decided like I want to be a part of documenting these moments, especially making documentaries?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I come from a family of storytellers, all in our own way, and teachers. And again, not like in the traditional sense of teachers, but everyone in my family, my mom who just passed in November,
Oh, my
and my
condolences.
two older brothers, they have great memories. They
I
can
bet.
recite my mom up until her 86th year. Could remember the poems and the pieces from her elementary school days, and like public speaking and oratory arts is a big thing in Jamaica and the Caribbean, I'm assuming, and particularly for my mom's generation. And she could recite these things, and I remember pulling out my phone, and I'm so glad I did this because my brothers and I, who are all very, very close, have these things now to look back on of our mom in her final years. But I have video of her doing some of those poems. I have video where I've interviewed her and asked her to tell stories. And she was very much aware of this film and my biggest fan, and very much wanted to meet Stacey, and they talked on the phone a few times. But yeah, like, so just to get back to this idea of documentation and recording. It's never too late to start that, because I do, like you, regret that I don't have home videos, on Super 8. My mom wouldn't have been able to afford any of that, raising three kids on her own here in Toronto. So, yeah, it's super important. And Zuri is part of this. She's 12 now, and so she's part of a generation that are like digital natives, and this is something that is she's going to grow up and have all of this, for better or for worse, to look back on. That's something Stacey and I talked about as well, in the early days of making this film, because there was a time, I remember we had one shoot where we were going to record with our fancy cameras. Stacey Ann and Zuri doing a living room protest, like preparing and getting ready and recording their own living room protest. So it was like a recording of a recording. And I think Zuri felt the pressure of us being there. And so their living room protest kind of just, it just didn't work out the way she wanted. And she got really emotional and frustrated, and she ran off to her room, and it was a whole thing. And in the wake of that, Stacey Ann and I talked about, she was grappling with whether this was a good idea. And I was so, on one hand, nervous, because I was like, oh, she could at any point say, I don't want to do this documentary anymore. And at the same time, it was such a beautiful moment to sort of see her grappling with what it is to be exposing her daughter, putting her, in a situation where she doesn't have a choice if she's going to be in this dock. It's Stacey Ann has made the decision. And it was just beautiful to watch her grapple with that as a mom, and for her, like, in real time. This is not in the film, but we have, her on camera saying, like, maybe her participating in a doc like this is actually going to be good for her. She'll be able to look back and see that it's okay to not be perfect. It's okay to be flawed, and it's okay to be human. And that was where she landed. But she struggled with whether or not it was a good thing, because Zuri at some point is going to be able to say, Mom, really? A whole documentary about us? It started when I was 6, and now I'm 12. Anyway, it's a real, I'm sure a lot of parents today grapple with that. And yeah, these records are going to live long beyond us, and it's something I think we're going to be talking about for a long time.
And that's the thing about documentaries in particular, like they don't have a set ending. Like a scripted narrative feature film, you know what day you're going to start filming, you have this that like you're going to film for 8, 6, 7 weeks. And that's it. After everything is like post-production, some days you might have like a post-production shoot where you might go back and retouch some scenes, whatever. But for documentaries, you don't have that. It's basically going on the emotions of the subject, you know, especially for these types of documentaries, because they could, as you said, they could say one day, you know what? I don't want to do this. I don't have the emotional or mental or even physical capacity to keep doing this, especially when it's about such emotionally heavy topics, you know, where they're delving into their psyche and bringing back up things that they may not have wanted to discuss for years, and say, oh, to make this documentary work and to be honest with it, I have to be honest with myself and I have to talk about these things. And as a filmmaker, you have to be like, I understand, you know, the filmmaker be like, I understand, I have to be empathetic and compassionate. But then you're also thinking, as a filmmaker, you have a story to tell, you know. If you have investors, you have like, you're like people invested in this film, like provided financial support, you know, you have the other crew who's going to be helping you with it. And you have all these concerns, but you still have to make sure that you look after the emotional well-being of your subject. So in talking about that, I want you to talk now about the financial and the logistical aspects of making a film like this, because it covers years. Like, how do you, first of all, go about through getting financing, especially in the Canadian film industry? And then, like, what is it that you have to keep putting in your mind? Like, for instance, you mentioned that you were worried that Stacey could have like ended the whole project there. But then, like, what is it that you have to keep in your mind and say, this is still in essence a business venture? And I'm not like downplaying the emotional aspects, but it still is an essence of a business venture. Like, how does that work for you, especially this being your first feature film?
Well, so in my first feature film, I didn't I couldn't have made it without, without Oya, my producers, my co-producers, Oya and the NFB, they together are co-producers of this project. Not I couldn't have made a film of this scale, I self-financed my first and did crowdfunding for my first short scripted film back in 2011, but something of this scale, there's no way. And so we did a lot of a lot of applications, a lot of telling, retelling the story in treatment form. In proposed scripts, people think, "Hey, do you how do you write a script for a doc when it's a doc?" And a lot of these things haven't happened yet. Well, you get to know your participants really, really well, and you start to map out potential places the story could go, and you write that down in order to give potential stakeholders an idea of what they're investing in, and what they're going to see on the screen. It's a really difficult task, actually, to try to it's different if it were like an essay documentary where I've got my thesis and I know who I'm going to be interviewing and it's a bunch of talking heads and at the end of the day we're gonna land somewhere. That's not the kind of film this was, as you mentioned. So it did take a lot of writing, and in Canada with the number of funds that are set aside for film, that was where we went. We went the sort of, I would say, traditional route of, CMF, Canadian Media Fund, and my producers, obviously in the earlier days would have had to, put money up front. And those are all the risks that are involved in producing in Canada. So I learned a lot about it. As a director and as a writer, this was a project that, like I said, was really near and dear to my heart. I think if I had known more, I perhaps would have, come on board as a producer and figured out a way of bringing something to the table. But at the same time, if you find the right producing partners who trust your vision, then it can be a really powerful collaboration. So yeah, I think that's for Canadians, it's really important that we talk about all the different configurations and the different ways it can work. And you're often piecing together money from different sources over a long period of time.
Yeah, I'm kind of familiar with Oya Media because I actually interviewed the two founders about what, 3 years ago. I interviewed
Oh,
them for my
cool.
podcast about 3 years ago for They did a project. I think it was the Canadian Heritage Minutes. They did a project for that.
Yes.
And like, it was great to speak to them about that. And fun fact, people, if you're not familiar, it's run by two Black women. Hey,
Yes,
so support.
Allison Duke and Gaddy Conte George. And that would have been Allison's direction on the Heritage Minute on forget the woman's first name, but Cooley
Yes.
was her last name.
I just remembered it and I forgot it.
Yeah, they should have been.
But Chloe Cooley, right?
Fully
Yes.
totally, that's right. Yeah.
And so I want you to admit, I in talking about logistics a bit, for people who aren't familiar with when with regards to writing for documentaries, can you explain about what writing a documentary actually entails? Because I think for like some when I first started doing this work, I wasn't sure what writing a documentary really meant, because to me, you know, it feels like everything it just go because it can take years, and like how do you write a
Right.
story that covers years?
You just press record and whatever ends up on your camera, you hand to an editor. Yeah, you would think that, that's not how it works at all. Scripts, you know, two column scripts with what we see, what we hear. I remember an earlier script had, you know, was sort of using the basis of an interview we had already shot in development. Where Stacey Ann was talking about, we might have actually shot some of the Montreal footage. And so the script started with that because we actually had some footage, we had potential scenes. And so, yeah, the film, you know, a documentary script has these scenes that exist and some that you have to imagine. We d hadn't gone to Germany yet, we hadn't met. We weren't sure if we were even going to meet Hazel, you know? And so I remember earlier scripts had just this projection, this idea that like if this were to happen, this is what would be, this is what would transpire. And it's so interesting because I ended up getting to know Stacey Ann so well that when I did that sort of projecting into the future, I could hear what she would say and what she would do. And of course, you're not married to any of this because when cameras are rolling, you know, things are inevitably going to change. So, but that's like, again, you have to understand what the document is for. That script wasn't really for anyone but stakeholders who were like, okay, you need such and such this amount of money. What is this film? And what could it be? And so it is a little bit of sort of putting the egg before the chicken. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
you have to say, you have to be like, this is gonna happen and it's gonna be amazing, trust
right.
me.
Yeah.
But then you have someone like Hazel who is not the most dependable
Yeah.
person.
Or you might have an event, you know, like I remember another draft had us traveling to an event that Stacey Ann attended every year. I think it was the Calabash you know, literary festival. And it was, you know, she was going to be reading from her book on mothering, or, you know, some excerpt from her book. And so you can imagine, you know, that afterwards somebody comes up to her and talks to her. Like, again, you're just sort of like thinking about these big events in her life and potential places where life is going to happen. And you're not writing down every word of dialogue, obviously. It's more general, broader strokes than that. And then, you know, sort of just, I mean, having an idea of where you want to be, and then just trusting that when you're there, the story is going to reveal itself, which it always does. It reveals itself there, and then it really reveals itself in the editing suite. And I'd love to talk about, you know, Sonia Godding-Togiebo, our editor, who just was such a joy to work with, an inspiration. We met through Allison Duke, actually, I want to say in 2016, when Allison was asked to executive produce a series of five short docs on Toronto-based activists. It was to celebrate 50 years of activism in Toronto. And she pulled together five directors, five women directors, female identified directors, me, Sonia, Gaddy, Ella Cooper, and Sarah Michelle Brown. And so that was the first time I met Stacey, I mean, Sonia Godding Togo-Vogue, because she's also a director. And we each did our own thing there with Allison. And then, you know, fast forward almost a decade, and she was my editor for A Mother Apart. She did an amazing job.
Yeah, I think she did because the story, the way the story is cut and like in editing, is done really well, especially the way how the animation is inserted to fill in the visual gaps of things that we can't get to see or happen, you know, like for instance where Stacey and she's talking about the viral children, we have the animation of that, and the way the editing stitches it all together works really well. The story flows complete. You know, it feels, even though the ending is kind of what you would call an open ending, it still feels like a full and complete story with regards to this, the narrative of the film itself. So I think she did an amazing job with that. And when we're wrapping it up, so one thing I do want to ask you, you talk about completion and about like that, you know, the story going the way you want it to go. You didn't know this film would end up in Jamaica when you started.
No.
What was it like for you going to Jamaica? And this is kind of a from a going from a personal aspect, because the film is again talking about mothers and daughters and discovery. What was it like for you being able to go back to Jamaica, your mom's home country, and completing a film there? You know, a film about motherhood and daughters and being able to do it in your mom's home country. Like, what was that like for you?
Well, emotional. My mom was still here when we were there on our last shoot. That was last January 2023. So my mom was here, and having health issues, and I was her main caregiver. So I remember being so grateful that my brother, I have two older brothers, one lives here in Toronto, one lives in the States. I was so grateful that they were both able to pick up where I, you know, in terms of caregiving, because I needed to be on this shoot in Jamaica. She was very excited when I went to Jamaica on shoots, because I came back with fish and breadfruit for her. And so, yeah, that was really special. And what was even more special was that Stacey Ann, like, we didn't know she was going to be in Jamaica because we didn't know that COVID was going to happen. And COVID is what sort of like initiated that move. A friend of hers was like, get out of New York, come stay with me for a week. And then that turned into 3 weeks. And then that turned into 3 years, literally. So, and then, you know, everything that Stacey Ann's doing there now in terms of the acreage that she purchased up in the country in St. Catharines, and her not-for-profit Kindred on the Rock, which is this beautiful homestead commune, a place of refuge for people who've been, for Jamaicans who want to return, particularly LGBTQ plus Jamaicans who want to return to the land and experience their country again. So she's doing all this amazing stuff, this amazing project in Jamaica. And this past March, was it? This past February, so the month of my mom's birthday, actually, I got a chance to go back. The film's done now, right? So I'm going back not as a filmmaker, not to document these final moments that you see in the film, but I'm going back just to feel close to my mom, to bring some of her clothes and donate them to Stacey Ann's charity. Just so many full circle moments were part of me going there this past February. And my older brother, who hadn't been to Jamaica for a few years, joined me there. He was there for a separate project. And when we got there, a friend of ours received us and said, welcome home. And it was really, really special. And I saw and felt my mom everywhere. So yeah, the film ending in Jamaica is very appropriate. Zuri's hands are in the dirt, the red dirt of St. Catharines. And yeah, I know that my mom is going to be there at the screening, and I know she's super proud.
Yeah, I think it is a very full circle moment, because it's kind of like because I again I did when before we started the recording, I didn't know that your mom was from Jamaica. But then when you mentioned it, I kind of felt like I was like, look how funny life is. Like, you know, like you're it kind of parallel, like your story kind of parallels the story of the film, where Stacey Ann's story, the story starts in Jamaica and it ends in Jamaica. And in essence, your story starts in Jamaica because of your mom and your heritage there. And like you kind of have a full circle moment of making your very first feature film and ending it in Jamaica, you know? So I was just like, oh, I was like, in my head, I was thinking, oh, like life is so funny, you know? Like life really does throw us for a loop, but then also gives us like pleasant surprises and like payoffs at the end.
It definitely does. And I, you know, I, my brother and I, both my brothers will return to Jamaica more than we ever did when our mom was here. It's just so wild to be walking around and to see people who look like her and who talk like her, and her favorite color and all the flowers, the fuchsia that she loves so much. It's everywhere. And so, yeah, I can't wait till we do a screening in Jamaica. That's definitely going to happen. It's going to be quite something.
I'm sure it'll be extra special for you. Thank you so much, Laurie, for joining me to talk about the film and your work and your experiences with this. I know the film for many people, especially I think West Indian, especially Caribbean women are like when they watch the film, they're gonna be like, yeah, this is my life, you know? Like it's like so many things are so similar in our because of our upbringings and the culture, but it kind of did for me personally. I'm just also thinking like I really do need to talk to my mom. I give her a
People
call.
sometimes people ask me what I hope audiences will get or take away, and I tend to not want to say too much because it sounds very prescriptive, but that is something that I hear a lot. That, you know, after seeing a film like this, it really does make you want to pick up the phone and call a parent. You know, and it doesn't necessarily even need to be someone who you're estranged from. And the other thing that I hear a lot, and this is something that was meaningful to me, is it really does remind us that it was Audre Lorde who said, you know, we can learn to mother ourselves. And there's a message in this film about what it is to turn all of that good stuff, all of that material, all of that attention we see Stacey Ann pouring into Zuri. There's a message in this film about what it would mean to pour that way into ourselves. And that was the biggest teaching for me. It's something that our immigrant parents, it's never too late to learn that. There's so much selflessness and sacrifice in immigrating and raising kids, you know, away from family and away from community. So yeah, I hope audiences will also take away this idea that like our mothers, our aunties, our grandmas, ourselves, that we have the resources. And often it's just the emotional resources. It's the time. It's taking the time to rest. It's, you know, going for that pedicure. It's pouring into yourself, giving yourself permission to be the way that you see Stacey Ann doing with Zuri. It's a perfect model for that.
It's about giving grace to ourselves, which can be very hard to do. Like sometimes it's easier to give grace to other people than it is to ourselves. And it is about like I think in order to be able to give grace to people, we need to understand what grace is personally first. Because how can
Got
you
it.
extend something to someone that you yourself don't understand or know or have, you know?
You took the words right out of Stacey Ann's mouth. She says it at the end of the film, and I won't say it now. Go watch the film. You'll know what she says about grace. That's exactly it.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for joining me, Laurie. Thank you for making the film and much success. And I like when you do show it in Jamaica, I'm sure like you will have like some very exciting reactions to it. Again, kudos to you and thank you, of course. Like Stacey, I wasn't able to join us, but thank you to Stacey Ann and to Jerry and to Lara for the film and to Hazel too as
Yeah,
well for being so open with us
absolutely.
because it's not easy.
Three generations of women, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
Big,
that's
big,
pretty,
big gratitude to them.
yeah, 3 times. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, bye. Have a good day.
Thanks.
So, everyone, that was another episode of Karen and Toss. And in this episode, I spoke to filmmaker Laurie Townsend about her first feature directorial debut, A Mother Apart, which is a documentary about LGBTQ activist, poet, writer, author, amazing mother, Stacey Ann Chin, and her exploration, her emotional exploration into discovering her mother, who she is as a mother, and her daughter, and the connection she has with that, as well as to her sister, Lara. And it was a labor of love, as we would say. It took 6 years, and I think it was 6 years well worth it and well spent. Again, thank you to Stacey. And she wasn't able to join us for the interview, but thank you for her for being so open with this film and making it, I think, for her, but also for so many other women who have similar situations and circumstances and experiences. Thank you to my listeners for listening to this episode. If you are a new listener to Carolyn Talks, thank you so much for listening. And to my veteran listeners, thank you so much for sticking by me through all this. And I hope you've enjoyed every interview that I've ever done. And I hope you look forward to more interviews. This one was for the Hot Docs International Film Festival, which is taking place here in Toronto. You can, of course, find the video version on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@Carolyn_Hines. It's in my Carolyn Talks playlist. And on if you type in on YouTube, Carolyn Talks Podcast or Carolyn Talks Podcast and YouTube channel, you'll find all of the videos there that I've done for Hot Docs, other film festivals like South by Southwest, TIFF, Sundance, Toronto Really Asian International Film Festival, all these amazing interviews I've been able to do with filmmakers from literally all over the world talking about different films and different stories and different filmmaking, I think, perspectives and outlooks. And you can, of course, find everything on my R3 page. That's my digital portfolio at r3.com/Carolyn Hines. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Carrie, CNH12, CARRIE, CNH12. In the description box, I'll also provide links to the Hot Docs site as well as to the film site for A Mother Apart, as well as the Laurie's site and Stacey Ann's site as well, so you can get more information on so you can get more information on them as well. So until the next episode of Carolyn Talks, everyone, stay safe. Bye.